Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Ruby Rogues podcast. This week on our panel, we have John.
Hello.
Luke.
Hello.
I'm Charles, or Chuck. And this week, we're talking to Justin. Justin, do you want to introduce yourself and let people know who you are?
Yeah, hi, this is Justin Gordon from Maui. A lot of people know me from a very long time ago when I had a blog called Rails on Maui. And I got a little bit well known in 2014 because I was one of the first people that really integrated Webpack and React and Ruby on Rails. And then I developed a pretty library called React on Rails. And I've been involved in doing this sort of work for a number of years. I think this is my third time that Chuck's invited me. So I'm really grateful to Chuck for the opportunity to get a chance to meet all of you today.
Leveling up is important. I spend at least an hour every day learning ways I can improve my business or take a break and listen to a good book. If you're looking to level up, I recommend you start out with the 12-week year as a system to plan out where you want to end up and how to get the results you want. You can get it free by going to audibletrial.com/code. That's audibletrial.com/code. Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming back. Now, we have you coming back on to talk about Webpack and Webpacker and React on Rails. And I know you've contributed to both Webpacker and, you know, you created, like you said, React on Rails. One thing that I'm a little bit curious about just to get started is we moved away from Sprocket several years ago to Webpacker. And I know some people are happy with the move and some people aren't. And I found that it's relatively simple if you're just doing a yarn install to pull libraries in. But one thing that I miss is pulling in my custom JavaScript code. It seems like that's always a giant hassle to figure out how to get that in. Do you have any tips for that before we get too deep into this?
Sure. Well, I think, Chuck, I'd have to take a look at your exact situation. But I think let me get this clear. You're having trouble getting custom JavaScript code in with Webpacker, not the original Sprockets. And that the reason why, I'm guessing, is you just like making sure you got some manifest file in Sprockets that says include everything globally. And it's just all there in one giant global mess. And that's really easy. And you like that, right, Chuck?
Yeah, basically. Or I could say, these are the ones I want. I want that one and 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 I'm done.
Sure. Sure. And that's actually really not too hard over in Webpacker once you get used to it. The main thing is that there's going to be a little bit extra complexity when you just don't want your program a bunch of global variables. And I think there are a lot of reasons why. And you're just going to... Anyway, Chuck, we'll have to go one-on-one and take a look at your situation and take a look at that.
Yeah, I'll admit that most of the time what I'm running into is I've pulled some UI that I bought off of like themeforest.net or something. And so it includes some libraries that aren't on NPM or, you know, something like that. And so it's pulling in some other library. And yeah, because, you know, jQuery isn't global or some other thing isn't global, it isn't playing nice. And so that...
Oh, okay, I know exactly the problem you're talking about. You're talking about like dealing with the whole Yarn NPM ecosystem with legacy libraries that have globals. And so there is a special place in Webpack configuration that you just got to know about that enables those globals, because Webpack's really nice in that you don't see all those globals unless, and this isn't part of really Webpack, so we're part of the whole module system and Babel, is that you're not going to see those unless you put in a few things that are special. So and basically it's protecting you from all the hazards of globals, and you got to get around that.
Yep. Makes sense. But yeah, that's where I get tripped up. It's that kind of thing.
To run over that really quick, so my solutions for that kind of a problem, because I've encountered this as well on many apps that have been trying to migrate right to the Webpacker ecosystem, is that there's basically a couple plugins, more or less, plus some config settings, right? Does that seem more or less in line? Or is it really... like literally there's something buried down in the Webpacker config tree that I've just been oblivious to all this time. And that's all I needed the whole time.
Well, I've got a really good tip about this. I think it's a tip in general for programming, is that if you have a big app and then you're trying to integrate something and you're getting stuck a little bit, see if you can make like a tiny little app. And all you're trying to do is make that one library work. And so that way you kind of understand things from the fundamentals. Because if you're just kind of copying and pasting stuff from blog articles that came out in different years, working on different versions of Webpack, Webpacker, which is different than Webpack, et cetera, you can get yourself really, really confused. So there are just a few different settings in Webpack to set that up, and it really does work pretty good. But like everything in programming, you got to understand a little bit of the fundamentals.
Fair enough.
Yep. So where do we want to start? Do we want to start with Webpack, or do we want to start with React on Rails? Because I think one is eventually going to lead to the other no matter where we go.
Well, sure. I'm really open to your questions, John and Luke. I got some things I definitely wanted to talk about today. One of them is I did a humongous amount of work to prepare React on Rails version 12. Been working on React on Rails since 2015. And we could definitely talk a little bit about how React on why use React on Rails? Why not just use Rails Webpacker? I'd love to talk a little bit about React on Rails Pro and just kind of how I help people out. With just to get just like your situation, Chuck, if you spent 8 hours trying to do something and you were one of my clients on React on Rails Pro, I'd go, hey, Chuck, here you go. And then you're off and running, building your app and not basically worrying about how to do this DevOps work of making React work with Webpack, work with Ruby on Rails, making all the versions work together, and then making it work with all the complexities of your own app. Because you can only go so far with reading the different tutorials.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of tutorials out there for different things like this. Just out of the box, like what does React on Rails give you?
So the most important thing that React on Rails gives you is a really simple interface so that you can say React component, here's the name of my component, here are some props, they get passed into the component and you're up and running. And there's some super, super simple examples on the React on Rails GitHub page to show you how to do that. A few years back, I made it work pretty well with Rails Webpacker. And now with version 12, I've tried to remove as many duplicated functionality as I can. And the big thing I've been working on recently, which is really pretty different than before, was before I was really advocating a custom Webpack configuration for as compared to using the Rails. Rails Webpacker is doing a lot of what, I don't know if you know this much, Chuck, John, and Luke, is that it's doing some of the same things you get with something like Create React App, like Gatsby, like Next.js, like a lot of different frameworks that make it so you don't actually have to see Webpack. So when that started out, it just didn't work at all for a lot of React on Rails apps, like especially because of server rendering. And even to this day, I finally figured out a really good strategy for figuring out how to integrate what Rails Webpacker does with React on Rails on the server rendering side, which was a bit of an epiphany. I thought about all the different scenarios and I realized that the main thing was that the client configuration is really tricky for Webpack. That's because everything's got to be really optimized for a whole bunch of different browsers from old Internet Explorer to whatever the new stuff is. You've got to make sure you don't send extra JavaScript. You got to make sure you prepare images, fonts, etc. You might have SAS files, a lot of CSS stuff. And then you got the situation of server rendering. And server rendering, all you really want to do is basically execute a little bit of JavaScript code and create a string. It's just basically running a function and it creates a string. That's it. I mean, how hard could that be, right? Well, it's actually pretty complicated when you get down to the nitty-gritty. But the Webpack configuration for doing server rendering is really a lot simpler than the client configuration. So it's possible to take the client configuration and make it so that, and then basically apply a few modifications to it, and then you're off and running. And that, I realize, is a lot simpler than maintaining your own Webpack configuration from scratch, which is what most of my clients are on. It's what we've been doing for a number of years. I'm not necessarily going to move all my existing Shaka Code clients over to the new one yet, but I do think in the future, for a lot of new apps, this is the way to go because it is a lot of work keeping Webpack and the integration with Ruby on Rails updated, and that's done with Rails Webpacker. And that's the whole beauty of all this open source stuff is we're able to leverage it without having to do all the work and all the updates all the time. What do you think, Chuck?
Sounds interesting to me. I mean, I'm not a big React developer, so you know, I've played with it. Anything that gets stuff out of my way or makes it easier for me to adopt some of these like server-side rendering, definitely am a fan of.
Yeah, and not every app needs server-side rendering, and it's not the only usage of React on Rails. React on Rails is basically, the way I look at it, is the thing you want to apply on top of Rails Webpacker if you are using React, if that is your chosen library. And there's just a lot of different parts that make it work really well together. And you don't have to do it. There's a very simple example in the Webpacker repo that you can write some of the hooks yourself. But React on Rails includes an NPM library also. So I was mentioning you call React component. Here's a component name. Well, how is that little bit of JavaScript going to find that component name? Well, you have to register it. And so there's an API to register the component. And then that's pretty much it. And there are a few other little nuances to it that go way beyond the basics, such as the latest thing we've been doing, which is really super awesome, is really tight integration with a library called Loadable Components. So that if you're over in the Chrome browser and you do an audit of your page and it says, you have a lot of unused JavaScript, you should remove that. And the way to do it is you can do dynamic loading, and there's a lot of really tricky things that Webpack does, the browser does, so that stuff, your JavaScript loads just at the right time, but you as a programmer didn't have to do that much to set it up, just a few little tweaks.
Right. John, I think you've probably done more with React and Rails and things like that than I have.
Yeah.
What's your take on all this stuff?
So it actually sounds really awesome to me for a lot of reasons, but the primary one being the thing that you said earlier, you're trying to make it such that React on, or the things that you need to do to get React on Rails work, deviate as little as possible, like minimally as possible, from sort of the standard Rails Webpacker config, which makes trying out and like your ability to like trust it like a lot better. So from my perspective, I've used, what is it, React Rails, I think, is sort of the other gem that's kind of been out there for a while that gets React working on Rails. I've done kind of raw Rails Webpacker configurations and React on Rails on various projects over the past, like, I don't know, 5-ish years, something like that. And for a long time, I just wasn't happy with any of them. So I just used the Rails Webpacker config because my goal was to achieve exactly what you're talking about earlier. I want to be able to upgrade my version of Rails, or upgrade my Webpacker version, right? And I want to make that migration as easy as possible. And the farther and farther I get away from that default config, the harder it is to do. And it sounds like you're trying to get to a place where that's easier. And that appeals a lot to me. But yeah, I would also point out that I just recently did a tutoring thing. So I had somebody approach me. They kind of wanted a custom boot camp for themselves. They wanted to learn more about Rails, level up in that way. They wanted to try out some stimulus stuff. They wanted to try out some React stuff. So I did a thing for them. And when we got to the React portion of it, I had originally planned out that we were just going to use this basic Rails Webpacker configuration without using React Rails or React on Rails. And then right before we started, I was like, I should do a better job for my pupil and I'll try out both of these things. I tried out React on Rails, which I had basically a few years ago said that I would never touch again. And I was just like, wow, this was like really easy. And so anyway, that's what we ended up picking because it was that easy. So kudos to you for fixing whatever made me hate it back then, because I don't even remember anymore. Sorry.
John, yeah. Did you try out version 12 that came out in the last few months?
So I just went and checked while we started this, and it looks like we used 11.3. So it was it was good in 11.3. I haven't tried out 12 yet. So I can't say anything about 12 just yet.
12 fixed a really subtle issue with React hooks and the way the way components were running. One of the key interesting things about the React on Rails API is that when you register a React component, you can just give it the component. And a component in React is either a functional component or it's a class component. And that would just register that file, export a component there, register it, And boom, it works for server rendering, for client rendering. And one of the special things about the API is that it gives you a way to share some props with all your components. Like maybe you want to share something like, you want to know if you're on mobile or desktop, for example. That's a really good example because you can do your server, you can do your rendering a little bit different depending on what Rails said, hey, this browser is mobile or desktop. So what happens is that you get a function call that will basically, when you initialize your, when your component gets initialized, then you can actually do something before you call create, before we call create component. And this was actually originally done for Redux integration so that you can prepare your Redux store. And there've been a lot of other usages for this. And this came out before React functional components were a thing. And then what happened is that it got basically, it got a little, the whole system got a little bit confused. And in React version 12, and what happened was that what the workaround was, you had to wrap your component inside of another component if you were using hooks. And so I did a lot of work and finally figured out where the issue was with that. And that got fixed in version 12. So that was one of the big updates to version 12, along with a lot of little things to just make the integration between the two better and better and better. And also a ton of documentation improvements as well. I got rid of a lot of old cruft.
That all sounds awesome. I mean, to be frank, I mostly didn't use the documentation from React on Rails. I'm pretty sure that there were some like example, here's what to put in your app that I use. But beyond that, I pretty much at this point just kind of went my own way because I have, you know, sort of trust issues with all the React and Rails integration stuff. It's kind of like what we were talking about earlier. There's so many random tutorials out there for old versions of Webpacker or old versions of Rails or old versions of React. And it's so tough to tell the difference that I often, I just don't trust what I read. I just don't.
This is exactly why I changed the focus of React on Rails Pro to saying, instead of let me give you a bunch of software that's going to be super awesome, let me give you an hour a month of support in a Slack channel. You can ask me questions and basically remove any yak shave you got from your daily work. And we've just got, my team and I just have so much experience doing this that it's, you know, it's just really easy for us to help people out. And I think it could save a lot of people a lot of time for the basics. And then we work with some really great companies and we get like really, really super amazing performance on React on Rails.
I think that's a cool offering. I personally am, I think I'm personally too jaded to be yeah. a good resource in that way for somebody else. Yeah. But I'm glad that somebody is able to do that for other people. Yeah, that's awesome.
I'd love to share. I actually got a new React on Rails customer, and they were worried that is React on Rails, is it scalable? And right now, I've got a client I really love called Pop Menu. They make restaurant websites. So like if you own a restaurant, you don't have to program your own website, and even does things like online ordering, configuration of your menu, et cetera. And I got some numbers from them. They've been growing really fast. They have over 20 million page views from 6 million users last month, over 2,000 sites. And the CTO, co-founder Justice, told me the response times have stayed level, even as their site's traffic have increased 4 times since last year, around a second uncached to less than 150 milliseconds cached. So anybody that says Ruby on Rails doesn't scale, React on Rails doesn't scale, it's garbage. And the architecture that we've got for Pop Menu, it's a React on Rails site. It uses our node rendering. It uses a lot of caching that's built into React on Rails. And it's also built like a single page app. So we've got React Router in there and it's just, it all works and it works fast. We've got loadable components in there, so we're highly optimizing exactly what we bring over to the browser. And something that my team has been helping Pop Menu with for the last year is just every week going into Chrome Lighthouse scores and saying, how do we get this a little bit faster, a little bit faster, a little bit faster?
I know that I said this on our last episode, but I think that people use the X doesn't scale whenever they mean, I don't know how to use this thing, but I don't want to say that. I just want to blame it on the technology.
I was the one that jokingly said Rails can't scale last episode. So
I just think people like to blame things other than themselves.
Well, I think it's worth noting, Chuck, one of the things about Shaka Code is that as a service firm, I've kind of, you know, been able to keep it and grow it over a number of years. And the way I found all my clients, or almost all my clients, is through open source articles and speaking. And I know that's different than some other firms that, you know, do a lot more networking, do a lot more regular marketing, but pretty much almost all my clients have been CTO types of people.
Makes sense.
So it's been a real pleasure working on React on Rails and React on Rails Pro for all these years. And it's been really exciting the last few years, because there's actually a few years ago that everybody thought that Chrome was going to make it so you never needed to server render, and therefore React on Rails would be totally unnecessary. And that just has turned out to be not the case. And actually, server rendering of React is actually more popular than ever with sites with systems like Gatsby. And the reason why is you can cache the pages and you get super fast response times.
So do you build Gatsby, like Rails-backed Gatsby sites then? Or is that...
I was mentioning, like, so one of the things about Shaka Code, I changed the name from Rails on Maui a long time ago because I realized I was doing a lot more JavaScript. I go, well, this is going to be bad. And then I also moved to Oahu for a while, and that was going to be bad. So I changed it to Shaka Code. And yeah, so we've built a bunch of Gatsby sites. ShakaCode.com is a Gatsby site. I really love it. It's a really, really great developer experience. I think actually now with the new React on Rails version 12 and how well it works with hot module reloading, I think that, and if you check out that example repo, we'll definitely have to put that in the show notes. I think it's, you're getting that sort of developer experience. So that's another place we've been, doing some work is over on the Gatsby sites. Really any site, we've been focused on any site that uses React, that uses Ruby on Rails. Another thing you might want to, talk about in a future episode actually is Reason, is building sites using React on Rails using Reason. And Reason is basically, I don't know if you've had anyone, Chuck, have you anyone on the show about Reason?
JavaScript Jabber, we have.
Yeah, it's one of these things like React, the developers get on it and they just love it and they think that this is really the best thing ever. And so that's our choice over TypeScript, and we choose TypeScript over Flow, and we choose that over untyped JavaScript for sure. But all this is like extra complexity, Chuck, which goes a long way to your example of, I want to copy and paste a couple global JavaScript files into my app and have it just work.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of growing up into that. It's interesting. I mean, just if you use just what comes out of the box with Webpacker for a Vue or Angular or React app, I mean, you can get a long ways on that stuff. And I've built apps that way before, but yeah, it seems like when I want to pull in some library that doesn't live on NPM, that's where I run into the trouble. But it's interesting too, because all this other stuff, it really does move a lot of that crap out of your way, and you can just make it work for you. So, yeah.
Chuck, I've got a suggestion for you. If it's not easy to pull in from NPM, maybe you should think about why.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff, if you go, especially on like ThemeForest, where I mentioned that I got some of these layouts from, I've figured out that I have to be a little bit careful which ones I buy, because it looks nice and it'll run in the browser, but it's using libraries that are a couple of years old, right? And so I've got to make sure that they're up to date. And that's made it a lot easier, because then with a lot of those libraries, I can actually then just go pull them in from NPM, right? And then I just import them when I'm done.
You know, I think it's what it comes down to is that we all want a great developer experience. And a great developer experience means you're going to be productive. And what's going to go into that, and like for, especially for Rails apps, I'm able to work with, I don't know, 20 different active client Rails apps projects that use React on Rails. And the reason why is because there's so many things that are in common between these apps. Like you just know where to go and look. And that's why we love Rails. And that's kind of like what's been, you know, the main theme about React on Rails and Rails Webpacker and putting the two together is that there's just a lot less stuff that you have to be worried about. And then you get a great experience and the app works, et cetera. And you have less code. It's easier to update, et cetera.
Staying on the rails, right? On the rails. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm usually picking up these layouts because I'm terrible at design. Like I can't figure out what I need to do with it to make it look nice. And so I'm buying it for that. But then, I wind up having to adapt some of this other stuff to modern practices or to use something like Webpacker.
Yeah. But by the way, in terms of like staying on like standards, one of the places that people run into trouble using Node libraries with React on Rails or using it with, Rails Webpacker in general, is that the libraries are made all for Node Express apps, a lot of them, whenever you get into something like server rendering. And that's kind of like a big gotcha. And a number of years ago, Shaka Code and myself, we built React on Rails Pro, a Node renderer. And then so actually the Ruby on Rails, the Ruby process talks to a real Node process that does the rendering. And what was really fascinating was I was just working on a client project and I hadn't turned on the Node rendering yet. And they were doing server-side rendering with Emotion, the new version of Emotion. And again, there's always a new version. I've used Emotion before, I believe on Egghead's Rails app. Mm-hmm. And I go, okay, this is going to work even probably without React on Rails Pro's Node renderer. It didn't work. It just crashed out. And the reason why it crashes out is that the Node code or the JavaScript code actually looks to see, oh, hey, we're server rendering. We can do this stuff. But when you run, the way server rendering works on default React on Rails is you run in something called exec.js, which is just a JavaScript running inside of Rails. And there are a lot of limitations to that. And it's just a lot of extra yak shaving that maybe you can make it work for all these different libraries. But the thing we got with React on Rails Pro is you just spin up the Node renderer. It's very, the code goes, oh, okay, we're running server rendering. And then it just works. And sort of what happened with loadable components as well. So my point about lowering the developer, improving the developer experience is not having to go and yak shave, oh gosh, now we're trying to use exec.js inside Ruby on Rails. The open source isn't maintained to that. How am I going to do that? And then great. Hey, I got a solution for you. Just use a Node renderer.
Yep.
Some of these tips are things that using Node.js, I've done Node.js for years, right? Like a lot of these tips are things that I'm like, oh yeah, I recognize this thing. But like keeping all of that in your head. And then even if you have it all in your head, transferring that knowledge to say one of your teammates or somebody else who's working on a different project than you is just super hard. That's a huge knowledge barrier or whatever to people being able to be successful with this whole stack.
Well, I think the key thing, John, is knowing where to look and knowing how to debug. There's a joke that says, actually I'll ask you guys, what's the difference between a senior developer and a junior developer? You guys ever hear that joke? Mm-hmm. The senior developer knows what to Google for.
Fair enough. Trying too hard.
Yeah, very, very simple. And it's true. It's just that sort of like you develop like a scent, a sense of smell. It's like, like when something's not working that should really be working and you don't find anything in Google, you should know I'm probably doing something really silly. And then you're just going to have to use some sort of, divide and conquer strategy for, figure out where you're doing something silly. Maybe it was the last commit, that broke something. So, or, hey, this should work. And hey, there's an issue about this. Okay, now I got to decide, do I wait till the issue gets fixed? Do I want to work on the open source, et cetera?
Yep.
So I think one of my personal questions that kind of came up recently for myself, but this just constantly comes up is, why should I use React on Rails versus like raw Rails Webpacker, I guess, versus React Rails, if you're familiar with that argument as well. But I guess around that, like, what would you say, like, the primary focus of React on Rails kind of is and, like, maybe what the primary use cases are? Why would I use it? Like, what are the situations that I would pick it over other things? And maybe if you know the negatives, like, why I would pick the other things over React on Rails?
Sure. First of all, if you're going to use React with Ruby on Rails, I don't see any disadvantage to using React on Rails. It's going to give you the basic helper React component. Your component's going to be on the page. You don't need to server render it. You didn't need to write some extra JavaScript code you have to maintain. And you have a lot of resources, so if you want to do something extra, you can do it. I don't know React Dash Rails that well, and it's actually something I was mentioning in terms of my goal with React on Rails Pro was to actually move my service away from just helping people use React on Rails, the React on Rails library, and maybe some extra software that's not included in the open source, to really just helping businesses, developers use React with Ruby on Rails, including Webpacker. That was why I've spent so much time working on the Webpacker open source and made that Ruby conference talk on Webpacker, because I realized that that's a much better business for me to be in. My goal isn't to make React on Rails popular. My goal is to help lots and lots and lots of developers with this stuff. So one of the things I'm going to be working on in the near future is a comparison of a really in-depth comparison of React Dash Rails and React on Rails. There are definitely a few things I kind of know off the top of my head is that the way that React Dash Rails is set up in terms of how it loads the components and things is really quite a bit different than React on Rails. React on Rails, it's a super straightforward process that there's a little NPM module, it's a little JavaScript library. You register a component. And once the component's registered, it goes into a global variable. And then there's some bootstrapping code that goes onto your page and globally. And when you put it together with Webpack, it senses that, hey, it's on a page. It will look for any of the little bits of DOM elements and say, hey, there's a React on Rails component. Everything gets bootstrapped and run. And then that's it. And you don't have to worry about maintaining any code of your own to do that. So I think, John, one of the things about, all these projects is the question you could ask yourself is, what is going to be a great developer experience for the person that comes to maintain this 3 years after I've left? And if they go there and they say, hey, it's very much in line with Rails Webpacker. Hey, it's got the React on Rails is in there and it's got some, it's well documented, et cetera. The open source is very widely used. I can trust it. Great. That's a lot simpler than, oh, hey, who's this guy? What was this guy doing with all this extra JavaScript code? He started off really simple, but he kept adding one more thing there, et cetera.
I mean, fair point. What about my developer experience?
Yeah. What's been your experience with those libraries?
Just been a mess. But what I said earlier is true and still holds true. I did have a good experience recently with React on Rails. So that's currently where I sit. Or I should say I had a good experience recommending it to a pupil who then implemented it and didn't complain too much. So I felt like it was a good experience.
I think there's one of the things about with React on Rails and the history of it, I think it's really important to know about is that it originally started out just having Webpack put JavaScript together and go through the ACID pipeline. And then later on, it became pretty clear that Webpack was basically going to replace Sprockets or be a complete substitute for the whole Sprockets pipeline. And the Rails Webpacker library came out. And there were a bunch of problems with it when it first came out. And then I worked on a fork of it. I called Webpacker Lite. I made a version of React on Rails work on that. And that was kind of moving away from the direction of making things very, very simple with just the standard Rails Webpacker. The problem with actually having that fork, I think it caused a bad developer experience because it was just caused some extra confusion, extra upgrade issues, et cetera. So what happened is that the good result of working on the fork of that was there were a lot, many, many contributions I made over the years into Rails Webpacker so that it does work for a bigger variety of applications. If you take a look at the main, some recent articles and things on Twitter, et cetera, about, why does Rails Webpacker why is the folder called app JavaScript where stuff goes into, Rails Webpacker? Because really, you can have images, you can have fonts, CSS, SAS, et cetera. And the reason why is that the default for, I guess, for Basecamp is to still use sprockets for your front-end assets. So there were some fundamental differences, and a lot of this stuff really is just, it's really hard. It's hard writing open source. It's really hard when your open source depends on another library and you're trying to make the two work together. You're submitting pull requests, they're not getting merged, or it just takes forever, et cetera. So those are the challenges I've been dealing with. And I'm still continuing to make suggestions to the Rails Webpacker library. Like there's a real big problem I discovered when I was setting up this idea of a server Webpack configuration based on the client Webpack configuration and having that work with Rails Webpacker. And the problem is that the current implementation of Rails Webpacker uses one global variable that's a super, super global. Like you cannot touch this thing at all. And eventually I figured out I had to make a deep copy of it before messing with it at all. And it was super, super confusing. It's sort of a pattern you just wouldn't really see, is that the value exported from the Rails Webpacker library is actually, rather than a class, a constructor, things like that, it's an actual instance. I mean, how often do you see that? So it created this super global, and you know, even some function calls that I thought, like, you know, create your Webpack configuration, your final result from your configuration, and it actually wasn't an immutable object, because then you go and you change that, you know, when I'm figuring out my server configuration, and then it just all blew up. So there are a few things in the links you're gonna share that, and I did actually mention in my talk about how your Webpack configuration from Rails Webpacker can export an array, and that way you'll actually create multiple. You can use multiple Webpack configs. So that's where it's came about.
Actually, yeah. When I was watching it, and I didn't know what to think about that. I still don't yet, but that's cool.
It's super important for creating a server bundle. Another thing we actually did is that if you have a really large app that's got basically, say, like an admin user interface and then a customer-facing user interface and lots of JavaScript libraries, and use bundle splitting and use one Webpack configuration, what happens is you're optimizing those libraries across two completely different circumstances.
Yep.
And so it's totally suboptimal. So my team and I figured out is that basically you can create two totally separate Webpack configs, and that way your bundle splitting is completely separated. And then that way, you know, you're completely like, say you have an admin user interface, it's software as a service, it builds websites, and it's, you know, a lot of JavaScript. And then you have something you want to be super lightweight because you're deploying these applications for a consumer-facing site. So that's another example of why you'd want to make completely different Webpack configurations, even for a client-side app.
Have you ever wondered if you could be offering a faster, less buggy experience for your customers? I mean, let's face it, the only way you're going to know that is by actually running it on production. So go figure it out, right? You run it on production, but you need something plugged in so that you can find out where those issues are, where it's slowing down, where it's having bugs. You need something like that there. And Raygun is awesome at this. They just added the performance monitoring, which is really slick, and it works like a breeze. I love it. It's like you get the ray gun and you zap the bugs. Anyway, definitely go check it out. It's going to save you a ton of time, a ton of money, a ton of sanity. I mean, let's face it, grepping through logs is no fun, and having people not able to tell you that it's too slow because they got sidetracked into Twitter is also not fun. So go check out Raygun. They are definitely going to help you out. There are thousands of customer-centric, customer-focused software companies who use Raygun every day to deliver great experiences for their customers. And if you go to Raygun and you use our link, you can get a 14-day free trial. So you can go check that out at rubyrogues.com/Raygun.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. I can already see a few different places where I could use that, where I have that kind of a scenario, or I'm serving a React Native app and it's grabbing. Anyway, that one's just weird. But yeah, I have a few different places where I could see that happening, but I have no idea how to use it yet. It was an interesting tidbit that I have to explore still.
I'm just trying to think of where things go from here. So does React on Rails help you with testing your React and Rails apps?
So React on Rails is not, you know, React on Rails is not particular for helping you test the apps. Other than that, I'd say it was like, there's a lot of documentation on how to set things up and make it work really smoothly. In terms of like what we're doing with React on Rails Pro and working with a lot of different customers on testing apps that use React, that's definitely something that we're helping out people with. Incidentally, Shaka Code is also helping maintain the Shaka Code Cypress on Rails. So we've kind of been working on integration of Cypress to test out these apps. So it doesn't help necessarily with the testing of the apps. Other mm-hmm. than that, it just, you know, it's all part of the whole ecosystem.
So still use your favorite JavaScript testing library kind of thing?
Well, there's
maybe do some integration.
Yeah, there are two levels of testing these JavaScript apps. One is full integration apps where, you know, React on Rails and the whole ecosystem is pulling everything together and running your Rails app. And when you're doing it with Capybara, you're actually just running one process that's kind of doing everything. It's all, you know, all one thing. And then the other thing we've been doing a bunch of is actually starting up a separate Rails server and using Cypress to hit it. And that, again, you're doing integration tests. The other part of the equation is actually just doing unit testing of JavaScript. We do that some. We've done, you know, snapshot testing. What we found in terms of productivity in, you know, for building client-side applications is we really focus on some integration tests, and we really focus, rather than on unit testing the JavaScript, using static typing. That's just been a real game changer, to go from JavaScript to Flow to TypeScript, and especially using Reason, which basically takes out a lot of the... It just basically, your code doesn't compile unless it can work. And there's so many different ways you can change your code with regular JavaScript or even TypeScript, and it just won't work.
Nice. I had a funny JavaScript typing problem last week, where the external service was feeding into JavaScript, and every so often it would send a null instead of a zero, which JavaScript will happily, mm-hmm. in this case, turn into a zero, right?
Yeah.
And I was looking at it thinking, oh yeah, you know, maybe we should have some types somewhere. But in that case, I don't think that something like TypeScript would have picked it up.
Yeah, TypeScript is, the advantage of TypeScript is that it's really a lot easier to get going and work with a lot of different NPM libraries. It's just, in fact, Chuck, the example repository where I got those clean set of like 15 commits, one of those commits is actually building a React on Rails. It's building Rails new, then it's building add React on Rails, add Rails Webpacker, mm-hmm. add TypeScript, set up hot module reloading, then set up server rendering. So in that flow is setting up TypeScript. So it's super, super easy to do. The problem is that Luke is absolutely right, is that the problem, that it's kind of a double-edged sword, easy to do, but it doesn't catch a lot of those problems. And that's why for a lot of applications, we really love using Reason. And it's in that same line of languages like Rust. And you just can't, there's just, you know, null is not a thing in those languages. There's no nil, there's no null, is that you have to just say explicitly that, hey, there's going to be some value in there. So you don't get those crazy problems. So it is definitely a little more challenging up front, especially, you know, the thing about the big disadvantage of using Reason these days, it doesn't have the Google ability, TypeScript, Ruby on Rails, et cetera. But, you know, there's some members of my team that have contributed a lot of stuff to the open source in Reason and libraries in Reason. So we know it really well. So, you know, with our customers, we basically, there'd be some yak shaving with Reason if we didn't help get people unstuck. But once you get past the basics, it's just, like I said, it's just one of these developer experiences. Like the first time you use Ruby on Rails, you use React, like, oh, wow, this is really, really great. I want to stick with this.
Now you're making me want to go try it again.
Oh, that, by the way, that's another thing also that was added in React on Rails V12 is that we moved the library, the NPM library, over to TypeScript, and it does export TypeScript bindings. So
I've been going through the tutorial with server-side rendering and the hot module reloading.
Yeah.
which I can't help but feel should be module hot reloading.
Module hot reloading as opposed
to... It's okay.
The name, HMR.
HMR looks better. I'd rather have HMR than MHR. MHR sounds medical.
You know, the hot reloading, though, is an interesting topic for the developer experience, because for the longest amount of time, I think this is one of the problems with React on Rails and why it fell out of favor a little bit before, was because in order to make hot module reloading work with Ruby on Rails, there's something actually addressed in my talk on how Webpacker works. And basically, the Webpacker has some really neat plumbing to make hot module reloading work. And it's tricky. And a lot of it involves with making sure, you know, one is you have a hot module reloading server working, Rails Webpacker magically just checks for the port. So it, and then if it finds that there's a server running on that port, then boom, it proxies your request over to the hot module server, which is basically a little web server. And all it does is it serves over the JavaScript bundles that your client wants. So that the problem is that because React on Rails didn't, you know, I didn't super closely integrate the two for a long time until the last couple of years, it sort of didn't work. And the other challenge was that hot module reloading for a lot of years was always in beta and was always breaking. So it's one of these things you spend a lot of time and it's kind of nice. It's like a nice to have thing. And then so in terms of developer productivity, it was a net loss before because we spent so much time trying to get this thing to work again and then it wouldn't work. And so, but recently it's really changed a lot. There's something called React Fast Refresh, which was developed, I think, for React Native, but we found that it works amazingly well with Rails Webpacker, with React on Rails. And what's amazing about it is that there's no changes at all to your code. In the very old hot module reloading, you had to change your code, which was really kind of an anti-pattern. When you change your code for testing or for something like hot module reloading and make it more complicated, that was a real negative. And now it's completely done with the Babel configuration and the Webpack configuration. And basically, it's got that magic, you know, quote unquote, it just works. And that's kind of, you know, like I said, Chuck, I got that new little sample demo repository I linked to from the top of React on Rails. I can't say like just how happy I am with that. Although I don't think anyone's really hardly seen that at all yet. But I think if you kind of, you know, you could easily follow the steps in there. And a lot of the steps in there are shown by the commits. So you're just running a command line to install something. And there's a little bit in there that's some custom Webpack configuration to make server rendering. And it makes server rendering work, by the way, with hot module reloading. And you're like, well, what the heck did, you know, first of all, hot module reloading, what it's doing is the big difference between, and this is a lot of people don't know, is that if you have Rails Webpacker and you just turn on HMR, what happens is that if you don't do the special stuff like the React hot loader or the React refresh, your page just will automatically reload. So you do get a lot of the benefits from hot module from the Webpack dev server, which is mainly a much faster compile time so you can get stuff. But the really neat thing is when your screen just magically shows a little bit of the one React file and all your components that you just changed, and you don't lose all the data on your screen. And that's what the real kind of React hot loading is. Whereas the hot module reloading is just some communication between the browser and the server and says, hey, browser, something changed, refresh the page. So it, like I said, it all goes into a great developer experience, which is while you're using it, does it work great? And also, how easy is it to maintain? How much did you have to change your code? And for a while also, it's tricky to make it work with server rendering. And there have been a bunch of changes. Some of the things are actually in the Rails Webpacker master branch. They're not in a release yet. Like the Rails Webpacker, here's an example of like total yak shaving, is that I think the default configuration for Webpacker is that there's a configuration there for hot module reloading, and it puts that in your Webpack configuration. Because React on Rails will let you use the bundle created by your Webpack dev server. It'll just work. It'll let you use that. So you use the same bundle for the client and server rendering. but you really don't want to use that, but it will for, you know, just if you want to do something super, super simple. The problem is that that bundle contains stuff that's made so the browser can talk to the Webpack dev server. So guess what happens when you try to run that in exec.js and run that code and it's looking for window or document, et cetera, and it just crashes. And it crashes with a super obscure error. And then somebody like John is like, you know, forget this. React on Rails just sucks, right? And this whole server rendering sucks and all this stuff. And it's so, and you have to, you know,
it's not just John. I could count myself in that department too.
Yeah. You think it should work, it doesn't work. And so I do know that I've been talking to the maintainers of Rails Webpacker, and hopefully in version 6 of Rails Webpacker, it's going to be even a lot easier. And React on Rails and Rails Webpacker, I want them to be like peanut butter and jelly, just basically just completely going together.
Yeah, so in my defense, I don't quit that fast, but yeah, I do find some annoyances. No, I actually was going to say that I feel like I'm almost a broken record today, but clearly you've done a lot of work. And so I think that me giving you kudos multiple times today is warranted. But your Webpacker, It Just Works But How talk at RailsConf this year, the remote version, whatever. So I really appreciated how you broke down all the different configuration settings that you could do around a hot module reloading and all that kind of stuff. And basically when you were talking about like turning compile off or on, whether you're running the Webpack dev server or whether you're just running it without, you know, all of that stuff. I really appreciated that because, as you said, for so many years, it's just been a crapshoot as to whether you were going to have hot module reloading at work or not. And you just kind of, I mean, we abandoned it multiple times on different projects because it just was not worth the effort to keep it going. And sometimes we were just like, well, I didn't change anything in my code at all since yesterday. You know, I just freaking Yarn installed or something and now it's broken. And so there were many times when it was just where we just decided to abandon because all the effort that we put into it was just ridiculous. And we just decided that, well, we just had to live with it without it. I mean, basically, right? So I really appreciated you breaking that down and kind of talking through that because I agree with you. I think it's a little bit more sane now than it was. And you can actually almost trust it. You're supposed to be able to trust it now. I have to get over myself.
It definitely can be. And this is one of the cases where you really want to use the latest versions and be on the current versions. And that's one of the really tricky things about maintaining software I've noticed over the years is that too old and you have a lot of problems, and too new, you can have some problems. So you got to find that sweet spot where stuff, you know, you find someone else like, you know, like you look at one of my, like my example repo and it works with React on Rails V12. We have a lot of websites on it and you know, it's working. And that's one of the things, I guess, about popular open source is that if it's got a lot of users, you can sort of assume it works. You may have some issues, but you're not going to run into kind of like, if there's something really broken, then, hey, I'm going to get like, you know, there's going to be a new issue that's going to open up really quickly. John, I really appreciate your kudos on all that stuff because I've got to say, like, you know, one of the things about doing, you know, like this open source stuff is you can put a humongous amount of work into something like React on Rails V12. You look at the amount of code changes there and nobody said anything about it, like hardly at all. But I didn't see any new issues come up also. And I was like, every day I was looking, okay, I tested this. I have thousands and thousands of lines of code that have been changed. I, you know, removed support for old Rails versions. I basically, I removed support for the old way of putting your bundles through sprockets just because there's absolutely no need for that. I removed a bunch of configuration things and I just didn't get any issues, but I do know a lot of people are using it. I do want people to get upgraded to it for sure. There's definitely, you know, to stay current. And so, yeah, anyway, and thanks a lot for your kudos on the talk on Webpacker that I made. I definitely put a lot of work into doing that. And I think that actually played a lot into how I made React on Rails V12 a lot better. Because I think I know every single line in the Rails the Rails Webpacker library. I actually do read every single commit that goes in there and check it out. And that's part of the reason why I have a lot of pull requests that have been open. Many have been merged and lots of issues in that one. So the two libraries are, like I said, they're really working together.
Well, my pupil didn't hate his life, or at least didn't tell me that he hated his life. So I think you definitely have put in a lot of work over the years, and it's shown up. So,
yeah. I'm really excited about the future. I think Ruby on Rails, I think, has legs as strong as ever, which is, I think it's really defied the, you know, everyone that says Rails is about to die. I don't feel that. Do you guys feel that at all?
I think it's going to be replaced with Gatsby.
So full of crap.
No.
It's not. I mean, I don't think it's a new lease thing. Like, I think PHP sort of has a new lease on life. I think Rails legitimately still convinces, like, there's no way to get off the ground faster for complicated apps. There just really isn't anything that does what Rails does. It seems to really own that space, still does to this day. And there are lots of people that get into Rails. They have a very shallow understanding. They can't get it to scale. And that's fine, because Rails lets you do that. Rails is all about, like, come in, leave when you want to, right? This isn't Hotel California. You can leave whenever you want. So it's cool. I know that's not what Hotel California is about, but it's a good reference anyway, I thought. But yeah, you can quit Rails at any time, and it's totally cool. And I actually think that's part of its magic, to be frank. I don't like things that lock me in. And so I really like the fact that, like, I can get partway through an app, I can start blending with React, and then I can be like, you know what, it's time to move on. I haven't actually done this, but theoretically I could say it's time to move on. I want a Node.js backend, you know, or I want to, you know, turn this into a full-blown Express app or something, and I could leave Rails altogether for forever.
You know,
that's good.
That's a real, you know, it's an interesting, you know, you guys were talking about, like, you know, she's React on Rails or React-Rails. Really, the big question these days is, should you just just use Rails for your backend? You know, we didn't bring that up at all, but actually now that I think about it, that's really the really big question is, should you break your app into completely two separate GitHub repos, have like your app-front-end, app-backend? You know, what are the pros and cons?
I'm working on a project that does exactly that at the moment.
And, you know, the thing about with React on Rails is that it's got, you know, everything that, you know, the community talks about, you know, the majestic monolith is that you just start up the project, you type what command, whatever, your developer experience just works, or it should be just working. And then that, you know, you compare that to, you have a completely separate, separate home, maybe it's a homegrown front-end app, maybe you're using a platform like Next.js, Gatsby, et cetera, for the app, and it's hitting your API server. And, you know, what are some of the pros and cons of doing that? And, you know, some of the ones I can think of is that, you know, if you want to use, say, just sprinkles of React in your app, you can basically do that super easily with React on Rails. And you don't have to completely switch over. Like, you can kind of, a lot of apps can still do pretty well with basic Rails ERB screens, and people get up and running very, very quickly. So it's just a whole nother level of complexity if you want to move over to completely splitting things up. And if you do want to split things up and you did want to server render the React, then it really starts to get a bit more complicated. So
I am very much on the stimulus train. I have thought for a long time that single page apps didn't make a lot of sense to me. So I take that back. There are plenty of situations where you have let's say you have 20 plus developers. Well, there is some point at which having a whole bunch of developers working in the same repo starts to become a problem. Wherever the line is for you, it could be different, right? And so the majestic monolith, you know, eventually runs into, like, if you're trying to scale up an app fast because you're at a place that has a whole bunch of developers and your goal is to write a lot of features and, you know, have tons of bandwidth in that manner, you know, writing everything in a single repo doesn't necessarily make the most sense. But if you're on that smaller scale, which is where I've worked most of the time during my career, and where I think Rails is really pitching to, right? Like these smaller shops with like 1 to 5 people, maybe 1 to 10 or whatever. You know, the Majestic monolith, I think fits the stimulus kind of model. And there's some other things kind of coming out that are kind of challenging the whole like single page app as a whole. Stimulus is just an example of that happens to work with Rails. And so I think that we're starting finally to rethink whether single page apps are a problem for us. And I've full disclosure, I've totally written blog posts where I've like said, look, single page apps are the devil. Not exactly this very dramatic interpretation of how I said it, but you know, so I've kind of gone down that road. But I mean, I've worked on lots of projects where in some cases I thought React was a good choice. So I don't know. I've sat on both sides of the fence. I want to go the stimulus.js route. That's my take on it. But
hey, John, you're mixing up single page apps from using React, and it's really two different things. Because basically,
okay, that's totally fair.
Yeah. It's completely two different things because React is a great. I actually, when I first started using React, it actually kind of, when I went from jQuery to React, it felt like all of a sudden I'm sort of like on the Rails backend. I have some inputs and I know what's going to happen on the page. Whereas with jQuery, it was like all sorts of random events can come in from user interface or API returns. So React is definitely like, I think like a lot of people said, it's like kind of like the stand, like it's the most popular, probably certainly the most popular way to do complicated front ends for a lot of reasons. But you don't have to use the routing within React, which is using something like React Router.
Yep.
And so that's something a lot of people do with React on Rails apps. And that's also becomes really important. And then when you start doing that, you do want to do dynamic code loading, which React on Rails enables you to do, so that when you go and you hit one of these, you know, another link on the page, you actually don't even hit the server, just, you know, some JavaScript runs, the page loads. But you don't have to do that. And that's, you know, you could stick with the Rails routing and you could have, you know, different pages that have a React component. The whole page is a React component. You can also, one of the patterns we've had is that some of the pages in the app, we have the whole page is one React component. In other pages, what we have is just our header is a React component because the header's got maybe a menu, some other dynamic things. And so we take that header component when it's not on a complete separate Rails page and we put it inside this other, you know, master React component, which is when the whole page is a React component. And then we got all the routing built in. So, you know, it's, you don't have to do that is what I'm saying. And when you start doing the routing within React, it definitely does add an extra level of complexity for sure.
So all great points. And that's my fault for I'm trying to condense a bunch of complex arguments down into a small period of time. And I was ineloquent. My apologies. I felt that way at the beginning. The React was good.
Well, and it's an interesting conversation to have too, right? Because some of these systems tend to push you in that direction. I mean, Angular really leans that direction, right? You know, Vue, you can get away with sprinkling some of it in, and with React, you can sprinkle some of it in. But depending on how you're pulling it together and what patterns you're using from React, some things are going to push you toward single page apps, and some things are going to just kind of sit back and go whatever you want to do. And so it really depends on who you're watching, what patterns you're following, what tools you're using, and things like that. But I do agree with Justin, you know, yeah, React itself doesn't necessarily push you that way, though it is very nice for building apps that way.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was going to go with that, which is that it's been my experience that when I first started with React, when basically Backbone was kind of like, I don't know if it was dying, but it had sort of been evaluated already, right? And then Angular, Ember, and React were kind of like coming out at roughly the same time, you know, or whatever. It's when I felt like at that point in time, React felt very much like I could kind of, hey, I can put React in my app. I can sprinkle it around kind of like I was already doing with jQuery, and it was all cool. But I feel like over time, I've been pushed harder and harder towards a place that I didn't want to go, which is the full-blown single-page app thing. And I feel like the support for things that are not that has decreased in React itself. And I feel like Vue's moving that way too. It's hard to tell because I don't use Vue nearly as much as I use React or whatever. So that's outside looking more. And so a lot of my opinions come because I feel very pushed. But yeah, no, you're fair. You can totally and still can use React without going down that road. And I didn't intend to paint it that way. Sorry.
Awesome. Well, I think we're already over our time. So I want to be respectful of the time that we've allocated here for Justin. So let's go ahead and get to our picks.
Have you thought about learning to do native iOS development? Are you using Swift at work? Or maybe you've considered writing applications for macOS. We have a podcast that covers all of that called iFreaks. We have a new panel and a lot of exciting things to talk about. So come check us out at iFreaksShow.com.
Luke, do you want to start us off with picks?
All right, this is a dumb story. It's just come in, but it's a story about Apple making a top secret iPod for the US government, which sounds like clickbait, but is actually exactly what it says on the tin. Apple made a top secret iPod for the US government with a secret device in it. I think it's hilarious. My second weird pick is using PuTTY on Windows. PuTTY is the standard SSH client. Recently, I've had to start doing some programming from Windows over SSH, and it's quite unpleasant, as you can imagine. And the standard terminal interface, that just looks terrible. But with a few quick settings, you can make your Windows terminal for checking your servers look just as good as the terminal on Mac by just changing a few settings. And ironically, this article, which contains this information, comes from linux.com.
Nice. All right. John, what are your picks?
All right. So first of all, definitely, if you haven't yet, not because I'm trying to sow discord here, but because I was reminded and just thought I would say something. But if you haven't done a lot with Stimulus, definitely, I do recommend just check it out. It's a really cool project. I do happen to like it a lot. And the Stimulus Reflex community is also a great, if you need something kind of like Redux would be for React. That's not fair or whatever, but it's kind of like that. So definitely check them out. So actual more along the picks, I haven't had a scotch for a while. So definitely recently pulled out my Macallan 15 year here or whatever. And it's good. I'm just saying, most of the things that Macallan makes are pretty awesome. The 12 just is like Macallan 12. There's a reason why people know it. It's because it's like better than like every 12 out there. But the Macallan 15 year is a really darn good whiskey. And I had a buddy that bought me a bottle of it recently, and I hadn't had it in a little while. So super awesome. Check it out. If you're into scotch, if you're into whiskey, scotch is just a whiskey, guys. So definitely be doing that.
The way you led into that, I thought that was going to be about you quitting drinking.
Wow. Did I undersell it that badly? Well, geez.
He said, I haven't had a scotch for a while. And it just felt like it was going in a totally different direction. But it was
starting to disappoint.
You should have a scotch soon.
Yes, you should have a scotch tonight. That's how it should be. Though, if you're in America, scotch is expensive right now. So you just have to take that into account. But yeah, it's good stuff. Try it out.
Nice. I'm going to jump in with a couple of picks. Yeah, I just started playing a new game on my Nintendo Switch. We've had it for a while. My kids have been playing it, but it's Mario Odyssey, and really been enjoying that. That's a fun game. So I've been, I've been doing that. And yeah, another pick that I have, and this is something that I'm getting set up this week, is, and I think I've mentioned Podcast Playbook on the show before, and that's getting underway. I'm actually offering beta pricing while I build the course. And I'm looking at doing a $1,000 masterclass kind of setup, but the beta pricing is like $300. It's 30% while I build it out. So if you want to get in on that, you can go to podcastplaybook.co. The other one is I am also playing with some kind of code career group coaching online event kind of thing. So keep an eye out for that. And that'll just pop up on the devchat.tv stuff. So I'll have a link for the show notes when it's live, and you can check it out there. But yeah, those are my picks. Justin, what are your picks?
Okay, so I got a few picks for you. First one is that if you're into sports like kiteboarding, windsurfing, I'm sure you've heard about wing foiling. It's where you use basically like an airplane wing underneath the water and you're on a hydrofoil, basically it's a hydrofoil. And now they got a new, and it's super low resistance. So now you can hold a little handheld kite and it works because the foil has got such low resistance and it's crazy, crazy fun. So that's definitely something everyone's checking out. Another one is, just was listening to a podcast last night from Rhonda Patrick and Matthew Walker about sleep. We'll be a link to those in the show notes, I guess. And I guess I can't underemphasize how important sleep is. I think a lot of people do that. Another pick I've got, and this is my own product. So Hiche.com, Hiche.com. Right. Eventually, when you're going to go travel again and you want to go stay in a vacation rental, you might go look on Vrbo, you might go look on Airbnb. We're the only site that uses code that matches up the Airbnb and Vrbo rentals. So you can pick between the two sites, get the same rental and get a better price. Or you can also get in touch with the property owner directly and get an even better price. And sometimes the savings are dramatic. That's for techies out there. We've written some pretty amazing code in Rust to actually scrape the internet and figure out, you know, all these different matches so travelers can benefit. And finally, if you don't mind, Chuck, want to let people know about React on Rails Pro, and that supports all the work I do on open source.
Nice. Yeah. Seems like it's well worth it. One thing that I've been learning over the last several years is that I can spend a bunch of time banging my head against the wall. And, you know, I'll eventually figure it out on my own. Or I can go and talk to somebody and they can save me days of work, right? And, yeah. and solve my problem for me or help me figure out how to solve it in an hour or so. And so, yeah, that's super exciting because I can't imagine how much time and effort you save people.
Well, just remember, React on Rails is not just the React on Rails library, but using Rails Webpack or using React-Rails. But basically, if you want to make React work with Ruby on Rails, it's a little bit like people say, you do like DevOps for putting all that Webpack, React, and all that stuff together so the developers don't have to worry about that and they could focus on the features.
Yep. Makes sense.
Anyway, all right. Chuck, thanks a lot for inviting me. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks for coming and answering all our questions. If people want to follow you on Twitter or something like that, where do they find you?
My Twitter handle is still Rails on Maui and been like that forever. I definitely recommend just check out the GitHub page for Shaka Code, github.com/ShakaCode. We have a bunch of great open source projects there, some of which I did not even mention here today. Yeah, and just check out, I do plan on putting more work into some videos and blog entries on the ShakaCode.com website as well.
Cool. All right. Well, I guess we'll wrap it up here. Thanks again, Justin, and thanks to our panel. Till next time, max out, everybody.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.